Did Stanley ever express the desire to shoot a documentary, and how would he have done it, in your opinion?
He certainly did not. He was not interested at all in a documentary about himself.
Not about himself in general, just a documentary as a genre.
No. That was not his field. He didn't even want to make films for television. He wanted to make films for theatrical release. That's enough. That's plenty. No.
So your family is very multicultural. You and Miss Kubrick are both German. Stanley is New Yorker. And lived in England. Do you think this global atmosphere somehow inspired Kubrick and eventually prevented him from traveling a lot?
No, the conclusion is not correct. I mean, he was a citizen of the world spiritually, and he embraced everything. He had no prejudices. The reason why he didn't travel is, A, he didn't want to waste the time, and then he didn't fly.
So somehow the family, though, and the way he stayed at home, and did this somehow inspire him to do some kind of things in his movies? I mean, sometimes you see directors that move a lot and search for inspiration. Did he, in his way of living, find his inspiration in his own family and in his own country?
He was a very internal person, and he was an intellectual. So he wasn't inspired by traveling around. Mm-hmm. He was inspired by reading. Mm-hmm. That was his main source. He was a permanent reader, and he also was a movie buff, mm-hmm. and he was extremely well informed. He was a modern intellectual, but at the same time he was an artist, and his artistry happened to be filmmaking. Yes, I mean, the family was something that we took for granted. He was a real family man, but it would be an artificial contrivance to say that he was inspired by his family for filmmaking. It's just not so.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your documentary.
Okay.
And in my opinion, it's a very traditional documentary. Very traditional documentary, done in a very traditional way. How did you work on the documentary, and how did you stylistically decide how to cut it and how to shoot it?
Okay. At first we thought maybe we don't do it chronologically, to be a bit more original, and group it by themes. The problem is then that you tend to interpret the films, and you also tend to have a real editing salad. It becomes a bit of a mess. And it's very important, particularly if you make a long film, that the audience can easily stay with you, and you mustn't confuse anybody. And that's why we very quickly gave up alternative ideas and went back to a conventional form of following his life in chronological order and filling in what happened at each step. Now the problem was still huge, because I had too much material. I could have easily made the film 4 or 5 hours long. Well, that's not possible. That's not realistic. Already when you make a film 2 hours and 15 minutes long, you have to really pay attention to the fact that a viewer wants to have a good time. That's a legitimate request. You know, who wants to watch anything unless, you know, you're entertained by it? So that element had to come in. And I hope we succeeded. All the present echo suggests that we have succeeded. Most people find it amusing, interesting, and at the same time informative. Mm-hmm. Have you seen it?
I did.
So what do you think about it?
Well, I think it was very, in my opinion, objective. You don't see the fact that you as a director are part of the family and that you knew him so much. So I think one of the tasks also was to be very clear and very objective too, I think.
Okay, were you entertained by it?
I was. It was very informative.
Yes, I think this is a key part. Now, objectivity is a very dodgy area. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody is really objective. It starts already with the fact that I think he's a great filmmaker, a great artist. Family doesn't actually come into it. It doesn't matter at all, in fact. But the fact that I think that he is a great artist and a wonderful man makes me, of course, very subjective. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I think. Now, in fact, I had to almost solicit a criticism about him. It was very difficult to get people to say something negative about Stanley. And I had to say, look, I mean, you know how difficult he was. He could drive you crazy. I mean, he was so demanding. He could be so unreasonable. And the general answer was, yes, but, you know, what does it matter if I look at the whole picture? I've worked with him again and again. And in the end, I had a wonderful time with him. And the fact that he drove me sometimes crazy doesn't really matter at all. And this is, of course, correct. I mean, it's the same for me. You know, he could be very, very difficult and was a hard taskmaster. But it didn't really, you know, matter a great deal, because overall he was terrific to work with, a fantastic sense of humor, full of ideas, and he enriched my life enormously.
Do you plan to do something else with the material you have now?
I don't think so. At the moment I need to have a gap, and so my Kubrick time now comes to an end. I mean, I made this documentary, I spent a year on it, and we are also bringing out a book which follows the documentary somehow, but has many, many more stills. So that comes out next year, that's fine. And then I want to do something else. I have to go through his papers. That's one of the things I have to do. I owe him that. Once that is done, I think I want to do something totally different.
Okay.
Yes.
What advice would you give to a young producer? And what advice in particular would you have given to a young producer that first might have worked with Stanley?
To a young producer that
yes.
has worked with Stanley?
As a young producer, as me, for example, yeah. that comes to you and says, what's it like to be Stanley's producer?
Well, the key demand is to be thorough. That was his number one request, to be thorough, not hasty. Don't tell him things unless they're really thoroughly checked out. Don't be superficial. The superficiality is the thing he probably hated most. That's why he never talked to the press. Mm-hmm. That was his main criticism of the press. Not that they didn't like his films, that's not so important, but superficiality, hastiness, actually not doing a good job, that really bothered him. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sandy was also a great person because he knew a lot about everything that meant a movie. He knew how to use the photography, he knew how to use the lights, so he was able to say something to all the people that, as you said in your own documentary, so do you think he also had competence in producing, and could he give you advice?
No. I mean, producing is such a general term, it doesn't really mean all that much. Mm-hmm. Normally it means to make sure that you can finish with a budget and that you have a film which is showable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's actually not the real problem. The real problem in making films is having a good script. And I would also say having a good audience, because it's not easy to get a good audience. To recognize a good script. This is a very fundamental topic now, because it starts with education. It starts with schooling. Yeah, and but that's where the problem is in films. There are lots of good people to make films, producers and actors and designers. All this is plentiful. Good scripts and a good audience that recognizes it. There's the bottleneck.
Do you think you, as a man, you learned something from him in particular? Now, would you say this is something I learned from Stanley Kubrick as a man, as a filmmaker, as a producer, as anything? Is there something in particular?
To be thorough in whatever I'm doing. To be careful. Not to be hasty. Yeah. But here's the point. You say he made all different jobs. What you have, there's one man. One man is always a unit. So you have to see where is the connection between the different genres. And there is a common connection. And it is the vanity and frailty of our species. It's our own vanity. It goes through all his films, our own failures. That's what interested him. That's why he was so interested in Napoleon. A project which he would have loved to do and never could do. Napoleon for him was, I mean, the epitome of a person who was so talented, so gifted, in doing what he was doing as a military man, as a politician, and then he threw it all away. His failure was only because of himself. Nobody else was to blame. And if you go through his films, go through Paths of Glory, look at the vanity of the military people, and all of the whole idiotic action. But then, at the very end, you see something very different. You see men stepping out of this, not only of their uniform, but out of the life they are forced into, and they become normal people. They become like us, and you see the best of them, how they really are. Go to Dr. Strangelove, to Barry Lyndon, and it's always the same. It looks at, all these films look at our frailty. Eyes Wide Shut is a perfect example. And it even goes on in the film that Steven Spielberg made now, AI, which contains at the end, again, a wonderful compliment to our species and how beautifully we are made. He was not a misanthrope. He just looked at our weak points. And he thought we were quite miraculously made. At the end of AI, you will see artificial intelligence having only taken the best of us. Mm. All jealousy, all envy is gone, but only our ability to think and to have ideas, to be creative and to work together in total harmony. That's what we will see. It's a fairy tale, of course, unfortunately. But then fairy tales are always about us. They express our deepest desires and fears. And if you look at Stanley Kubrick's films from that point of view, you will suddenly see not only are they very, very different in genre, that is true, but there is a common denominator.
Yes, this is why I was interested in the question. I mean, documentary is not only a documentary, not only an informative piece of motion picture. I mean, it can also be something that can be considered a genre. I mean, people have to also have the capacity to do a documentary. This is why I was interested in knowing if and how would he have done a documentary.
Yes, I have no idea, because he never considered making one.
In your documentary, you said that one of the most important things for Stanley was time. So creating this way of living, this huge family and this tranquility that he said, probably was useful for him to do these kind of movies, the way he did movies. This was actually my question.
You're probably right. I mean, there's nothing to add, because what you're stating is correct. That was his way of life.
I'm asking, I'm not stating.
Yeah, but this was his way of life. The alternative wasn't given. He didn't travel. He was a reader. He was an internal person. He was an intellectual. He didn't need inspiration by traveling around. He watched television, yeah, and he was reading books. That's just a fact. That's how it is. So if you're asking me the question, is the fact that he lived this lifestyle influencing his films? Certainly, to the extent how and where he shot them. Because he didn't want to travel, yes. But so he made sure he could do the films in England. He did Vietnam in East London. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for somebody who travels at ease, you probably would have gone on a location. But these are formal and actually rather irrelevant points, because what matters in Full Metal Jacket is not where it was shot.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.